This is Church Tech Profiles, episode 8 for the week of October 12th, 2020. Caleb Lepke.
Well, welcome to another edition of Church Tech Profiles. And today I am here with Caleb Lepke. Caleb has this long, he has a short title, but he does all this other stuff.
I wear a lot of hats, yeah.
So, Caleb, you are the production manager at The Chapel, which is a church in Chicagoland, correct?
That is correct.
But you are also the director of breakouts for the Philo Conference.
Yep.
And you are also doing, I don't know what your title is, the director or whatever, chief cook and bottle washer for the staffing arm of Philo.
That's
and
right.
And then whatever else Todd needs you to do, like...
I'd like to say that Todd, if ever Todd wants me to carry his bags in the airport, I'd be more than happy to just be his guy behind him, following him. As I'll go sit in the back of coach, and he can sit in first class in United.
There's lots worse people that you could carry carry bags for. So that's very, very true. Well, yeah. Super glad to have you on the podcast. So
yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, so I'm glad we got connected. How long have I known you? I've known you, it feels like I've known you a long time.
It's been a while, yeah. I'm trying to think. It's probably been at least 5 years or so. Met at a trade show somewhere at...
Did you go to Gurus? Did you go to Gurus of Tech?
I never went. I started on staff at a church down in the suburbs of St. Louis. And the year before... I think was the last year that they had done Gurus. And then I wasn't able to go to that one. And then eventually we moved up here. And it was kind of funny. My relationship with Todd kind of started as they had brought him on at the chapel as a contractor after he left Willow. Cause they were oh my gosh, how can Todd help us? Right. And so I came on staff and he was a part of my hiring process, which was wild. I kind of got to know him through that and he helped us do some different things in production. And I got to be able to sit with him, kind of watch the master work, which was awesome. And, then through that, our team kind of started helping out with Philo and getting more involved. And now we're, now I'm kind of on that team and doing that all the time, which is amazing.
Right. Yeah. 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 I couldn't remember because it's really interesting because, at this point in my life, I don't usually even remember what I had for lunch, but I'm I've known so many of the folks that are on this podcast and we're on Church Tech Weekly and, done tons of shows together and all kinds of stuff. And it all kind of blurs together after a little while.
It does. Yep.
And I've watched you guys I used to think we're a bunch of young guys. Now you're not a bunch of young guys anymore. Now you're starting to be the old guys.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. We all live in this, funny role of other people taking each other's jobs when we leave and we all help each other get jobs. And, it's been a little crazy. So,
but that's, it's like we always say on all the podcasts, it's all about relationships. Mm-hmm. It's all about having a good network. There's nothing wrong with that. There's some people that don't, that are like, oh yeah, you should be able to get a job on your own merit and all that stuff. It's like, a lot of it is personality too. And if you don't have people that already know, my best thing for me is always being called and go, hey, you worked with this person for a long time. Do you think they're a good fit for our team? Cause I know their team and I can honestly go, no, do not hire them. They're really good at what they do, but that will not be a good thing, that person is a rock star. You should hire that person, And so I'm a big, obviously everybody who's listening to this knows that about me. I'm a huge believer in networking and because when people know you and they get to know you, you never know where that's going to lead. And I've just seen God use that so much, to open doors for people,
And it's weird because sometimes you know it, when you're at a trade show and people start talking to you because they want to gain something out of that relationship. And that happens often and that's okay. But, what's really great is to find those people that aren't doing that and they're just pursuing you to just build a relationship with you because you're a nice guy or whatever it is. And I think that's where over the years, you know, friendships have flourished with people who do our work all over the country and with churches and a lot of people like Todd have done that with people like me and kind of got me to different places, and I'm super happy for, you know, kind of where I'm at today and being able to do that for other people now.
Well, and I think that's, you know, one of the things, I think one of the reasons that Todd and me, that we became such fast friends is, you know, we had sort of similar background, not exactly the same, but sort of similar backgrounds as to how we got where we were.
Yeah.
And, you know, and, but the thing that I love about Todd, and I think one of the things that made us such fast friends, is we had just a love of the tribe of technical artists, you know, mm-hmm. that we just loved being around technical people, and we loved, helping people and, you know, and just sharing the stories. We love sharing all the stories of all the different technical people that we know. Well, that's a story that needs to be told, you know, and people need to hear that story. And so both he and I have a very similar thing in that. And, I get immense joy out of listening to, I remember he called me a while back, you know, before the Philo podcast started. Yeah. He called me and I'm sure I wasn't the only person he called, but he did call me. And he said, "Hey, I'm thinking about starting this podcast, you know, as one more thing for Philo and blah, blah, blah." And we were just talking about, you know, what was my experience with Church Tech Weekly and, you know, and the old version of Church Tech Profiles. And, you know, so we were just talking back and forth, and I was just like, dude, no matter what happens, your podcast is going to be awesome because that's you, and it's just an extension of you, and you're going to keep mm-hmm. doing that. And so that's one of my favorite podcasts to listen to is the Philo podcast. And I'm not just not saying that because you're on. I mean, it's the truth. I love that podcast because you just get to hear Todd's heart. And mm-hmm. I always encourage people to listen to it because I'm like, if I go, you're thinking about going to the Philo podcast. Well, but you're not familiar with Todd, you know, well, listen to that podcast, and you'll get your dose of him, and you'll fall in love with him like everybody else has.
Yeah,
fall in love with
his laugh. Yeah, it's just funny. But yeah, it's, you know, it's amazing. And like you had just kind of mentioned it, like it's helping people that are like you and me. And if you could see us right now, like we're both wearing black, you know, on this call together, and we are, you know, we're the same as anybody else that may be listening to this. And like,
you're saying that like there's another color shirt.
There isn't, but if there was another color shirt,
I do have some, I do have some dark gray shirts. So,
You know, it's just interesting. It's like, there's a lot of people like us, and how do we show, how do we help continue to develop people that are under us and help work ourselves out of a job, whether you're in a, you know, in a church production role yourself or a TD, and developing others to work yourself out of the job. I mean, we were just talking about that before we started recording, and just what it looks like to find people that you can develop and lead in your roles in your churches. And that's what we want to do at Philo. And that's what I want to do in my role at the church, and kind of continuing to do that all over.
So how did you start out in tech? I mean, what was your, you know, everybody's got a story as it weaves through, you know, what you're doing. How did you get started and realize that this was, something that you wanted to pursue?
Yeah, it was interesting. So my dad's a pastor, just like every other kid who may have started in, in production. So my dad's a pastor, so I'm around the church all the time. And I wanted to be involved with the worship team, and it turned out I could play, but I was awful at singing, and I wanted to do worship. And I'm like, you know, I think I'm just going to do production instead. And so I started off in the booth, and I started saying, hey, how about I can make other people sound better than I could sound, and started mixing, and eventually said, hey, let's, you know, I'd love to be able to go to college for this. And at the time it was like, I didn't know enough people to help me get involved in even some touring stuff yet. And so, went to a school and, you know, started doing that more and realized, hey, God can do some cool things through that. And I could potentially do this full time in a church, and that's amazing. And so it's like, I get to do this, you know? And so ministry is a lot more hard than what I'm making it sound like, if you're not full time and listening to this, but, It was good. So I started doing that and, really started off in audio and then branched out into a lot of different areas. Becoming a TD, thinking that it was all about just being systems and, mixing on the weekend. And in reality, that was like, about 20 minutes of my week. And the rest of the 40 hours was, working on everything but that, you know, working on people and stuff like that. So it's crazy, but happy to be where I am today. So,
well, I think that's it. You know, we talk about this all the time, is that that's a big, revelation to most people that become technical directors or, production managers, whatever the, you know, title is that you have, is that, this is a people thing. This is not, I mean, we used to joke, there's so many tech people that got tricked into being extroverts,
It feels like a trick sometimes and a joke of like, God, you got me. Like, you somehow worked me in and slid me into this, you know, doing the thing with gear. And turns out it's a lot more about people than anything else. And so a lot of what I'm doing at Philo with the breakouts of what I started, you know, when I was doing this stuff with Todd, was just around that and just like finding the right people to teach breakouts at our conferences, you know, across the US. And, it was so much more about finding people that weren't wickedly smart at one specific thing that they could teach you about, but, people that knew how to interact with people in front of, you know, 80 or 100 people in a room. That's the people that we found that were like, okay, you're great. And we want you to teach a class because you can hold your own for an hour, you know, in front of people. And so,
It's that 3% of tech directors that are extroverts, you know, can teach, you know. People always just say, well, why are, you know, I said, the only reason I'm up here is because I'm an extrovert and everybody else that's sitting here is probably not. So I end up teaching the class, you know. It's definitely not because I'm the smartest person in the room. That is for darn sure, you know.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, it was back in 2019. It was at the last like live event that we had other than Anaheim. And Todd and I were kind of sitting in the back of the room. I don't even know if Todd was with me, but I was sitting in the back of the room during one of the last sessions. And I was kind of looking around and I thought to myself, if I were to go on the stage and ask if any of these people were looking for a job, nobody's going to raise their hand because they're on the right side of them is their volunteer and the left side of them is their boss. And so, okay, that's a problem. And Stan Endicott, who you and I both know, was kind of walking around and I caught him afterwards. I'm like, hey, Todd and I have been talking about this idea of a staffing side that just says, how do we help amazing people that we do know that are pastors and not just button pushers interact with these amazing churches that are looking to hire them? And he's like, you got to call me. And, you know, a couple months later, we kind of partnered up and did this thing with Philo Staffing with his company Slingshot Group. And, you know, the idea is just like, how do we find amazing people that aren't necessarily always introverted, because there's more people than that, but who cares? I'm introverted. It's more, how can we find people that are pastors and leaders to other people that are like themselves and volunteers in their churches? And, you know, if our goal at Philo is to empower technical artists to make their churches more effective, then let's do that with people as well. Cause I think people matter more than gear, even though gear is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, gear is what gets people in the door a lot of times. Cause they're, you know, I used to have this saying that I would always tell my staff, I said, or my volunteer staff, I said, look, you've got friends that would love to be in the tech ministry, but they're too introverted to say anything. I said, because here's what I know, nerds like nerds that want to serve. So the best way to find other people that want to be in technical ministry is the people that already serve in technical ministry. Right. And I was like, job fairs never work at churches. I mean, at least for technical stuff, I never, ever was able to get anybody. It was always, you know, the husband who the wife was shoving him into serving, and he worked for Verizon. So he was technical and quote unquote. And like, that's not the guy I want. I mean, I love the guy. He's awesome, but he doesn't want to do this. You know, he's doing it out of guilt or whatever. And that's not who you can do a lot of things in the church. You can serve in a lot of ways in the church. and kind of just do it out of a little bit of guilt. Not that you're supposed to do that, but I mean, you can get away with it.
Yeah.
You cannot get away with that in the tech ministry.
No.
In any way, shape, or form. Because you got to be all in. Like, and there's a lot going on. So, yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is that one of the things that I love, you know, because, you know, obviously, I mean, we were talking about this before, but I've known Stan for a long, long time, and he's one of my mentors. And I was involved in Slingshot in the very, very beginning with the tech searches.
I remember talking about that. Yeah.
Way back in the day. And one of the things that I love is that they're also out there looking for people who are not looking for a job. So they're out there. That's why Stan's at Philo. That's why, you know, that's why because they're looking for people who are happy at their job. Those are the people you want their resumes, because, you know, you want somebody who's like, okay, that person's a rock star. That person's a rock star. So my encouragement, and I'd love for you to talk about this, but my encouragement for people is put your resume out there. Even if you're happy where you are, put your resume out there, you know, talk to Caleb, you know, and just because you never know, there might be, God may have another church out there. And that is not, in my opinion, that's not being disloyal to the church you're at, you know, it's because, you know what, that way God has a chance to take you from that ministry and put you in another ministry before you go downhill and need to get talked off the ledge, and, you know, or getting fired, being spiraled down, you know. I literally just talked to a guy 2 days ago. They just got fired, you know, and he's going to have a problem finding a job because he's kind of bitter, you know. And I'm like, you're going to have to, you're not in a good place right now to find another tech director job.
No, you know, it's this idea of like how you leave this season of where you're at. If you are in ministry now, it's how you're entering the next one. And it doesn't matter if you're going to go work at another church, if you're going to go work at Starbucks, or you're going to go to work at an integrator or a production house that's doing corporate gigs. Like, how you leave your situation now is how you enter that next one. And, it was interesting, and I'll try to tell the story without going into too much detail because it's a little long, but yesterday
the names must be changed to protect the innocent, right?
Yes. And they're my names. Yes.
And the guilty.
And so I'll keep it precise, but man, I was in an all staff meeting yesterday with our church, and I literally was wrecked by that same thing that I was talking about of, you have to be healthy in where you're currently at before you're allowed to move on to the next thing. Because personally, God's been doing a lot of things in my heart of just trying to figure out what is God doing in my life and what is he preparing me for next in the future. And I have not been wrecked like that in years. And it was an all staff, and I'm the dude in the back. I mean, my team was the guy helping put on the all staff, and we're in a large auditorium so people can spread out. And I'm like, I got to go in the corner for a minute, you know. And I just, you know, God wrecked me and just talked. Like, I just felt like it was so clear, and feeling like if I can help encourage other people in the season, like, you got to heal whatever hurts you have in ministry before you can move on to whatever it is next. And so God, he put that on my heart so bad. And I had some conversations with people that I needed to have that were in that room.
Yeah.
We need to talk because I got some things that we need to talk about. And it was apologies from my end, and it was forgiveness from my end as well. And, and so, you know, it's a lot of that in these seasons up and down with church production people, because ministry is so stinking hard. And the people that may have gotten like talked into coming to a church because they know technology and end up doing this full time as a career, it's exhausting. And, the hill, you know, looks greener on the other side.
Yeah. And if you're not called to it, number one thing I tell people, I said, do not do this for a job. Do not be in the technical ministry for a job. This has to be a calling. You have to be called to it. Cause if you're not, man, you're going to have a really rough time. Cause there's a lot of spiritual warfare going on.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of rawness that happens. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and it's the idea of, you know, part of the reason why we did staffing that I was hesitant about was what we were just talking about. It's like, we're not asking people to leave their current churches and be, and pull them out of situations. What I'm doing is, when you feel that tug on your heart of what God may be calling you into next, or if I may be that initial tug for you to say, hey, you're an amazing production person, have you ever thought about taking this to another church that may be a little larger to develop some more people with what you're doing at your current church?
Right.
Now, all of a sudden, that I may have been that word to them, that initial tug that God may have been leading them into. And many times we end up, you know, having conversations with candidates and we're like, hey, you should stay where you're at, and you should dig into some of the things that you're telling me are hard for you, you know? And other times it's, hey, we had a baby and it's time to go home. We got to move back. And that's where I am in Chicago. You know, we had our first kid.
Right.
It was time to go home. And so,
yeah,
it's a different way of looking at it, but just so interesting to have these conversations with production people who maybe don't fully have a ministry background, you know? And it's like, I came in thinking this was production, and it turns out it's just people and ministry and politics and
yeah. Well, church. And I don't think that, and this is not, you know, I mean, we're pretty real here on this podcast, and, but the pastors as a whole, and this is not an intentional thing, but pastors as a whole, they don't realize that the tech people, when they come into it, if they're not seasoned, you know, like ministry technical yeah. people that have been in ministry before, they've got to mentor that person. Mm-hmm. Because if you're a youth pastor, you're coming into it because you want to be a pastor. And if you're a mm-hmm. children's pastor, you're coming in it for the ministry aspect. And almost every aspect of the church, they're coming into it wanting to be a pastor or wanting to pastor people.
Yeah.
The technical ministry, unless you set that up at the beginning, most people don't realize that. Most of these people that are doing it, they're just like, oh, wait a minute, there's ministry involved, and I have to talk to people. And I'm like, yeah, you know, you're Justin Firesheets was on the podcast a couple yeah. episodes ago, and we were just talking about, hey, this is a people business, man. Jesus was in the people business. And if you're in ministry, you're in the people business. And most yeah. technical people don't know that's about to happen on their first gig.
Yeah.
They're just like, what? Okay. So why is this guy calling me at 2 o'clock in the morning? Cause his sister died. Well, because yeah. you're kind of his pastor. Because
yeah.
he's closer to you than he is to anybody else on staff, and the lead pastor's unreachable at a lot of churches, you
yeah.
know? So, you know, you're the pastor, and you may not have the title, but you certainly have the standing, at least in your volunteers' eyes.
Yep.
So you got to be prepared Absolutely. For that. You know, you got to yeah. be prepared for that. And that's it's a big deal, you know?
Yeah. It's funny you said it. You said that my lighting director here, he was on staff at another church and originally started off in youth ministry and was ordained. It was an AG church. And turns out that years of serving with this volunteer here at the chapel where we're at now, the volunteer was getting married, and he's like, will you marry us? And he was like, what? You know, like, you know, and he married him, and he was so nervous to do it. And I was so proud of him for doing it. I just thought it was awesome. And just like, man, this is who we are called to be as church production people. And we are so much more than just button pushers, and we're pastors to these people. But I got to psych myself up sometimes when I get out of bed in the morning to remind myself of that, and how much weight that there is on me and the decisions and actions that I do throughout my week. Affects so much more of the global church than I think they do.
Well, and I always, you know, it's really funny because I, you know, people ask me, well, you know, cause I've not been a tech director for about 4 years now. And people are like, you know, do you miss being a tech director? And I said, I don't miss all the meetings. I don't miss all the budgets and having to do all that stuff. I certainly don't miss also being the IT director, but I do miss the staff, and I do for the most part, I mean, even more, not for the most part, even more than the staff, I miss my volunteer teams.
Yeah.
That was my, And I mean, I know a lot of people are like, well, yeah, you're an extrovert. I'm like, I know that, but I've talked to hundreds of tech directors in my life, most of whom were introverts. And the number one thing they loved was their volunteers. And, at least the good ones that survived in this, in doing this, you know, you have to, that's the thing that is, you know, because like you said, they're going to, when they want to get married, they're probably going to ask you. When they're having trouble, they're going to ask you. And you really know, like, I remember the first time I had to fire a volunteer to save their marriage. Like, I'm like, am I the only pastor in this church that realizes that they're serving too much?
Yeah.
That this is wrecking their family. And then my wife said to me, because, you know, she listens to the Holy Spirit. Apparently I don't, as a lot of wives do. Wives are way better at the whole, wives are way more in tune with the Holy Spirit.
Oh yeah.
A lot of times. And mine certainly is. And, she's like, well, maybe that's because he's on your team.
Yeah.
And so this couple both served on my team, and I had to fire them. I'd say, you guys need to get into counseling. I will help you do that here at the church.
Yeah.
But you can't be on tech ministry anymore because you're serving too much and it is clearly hurting your family.
Yeah.
And I don't care about you serving on this team in comparison to your marriage.
Yeah.
Cause God cares way more about that than he does about this. And so that the first time I had to do something like that was the time I really hit me with an epiphany of, oh yeah, this is ministry for you. This is ministry. And that was luckily pretty early on in my, when I become a TD, you know? And so I was like, oh yeah, man, this isn't just this. And, you know, shaking everybody's hands on Sunday and all this kind of stuff. This is like real stuff that I'm going to have to deal with, you know?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, and that's just even just the volunteer side of it and how massive that is. And then you got staff, whether it's you have more production staff of your own or even worship staff that you're dealing with, and a senior pastor that every senior pastor's got their quirks. And it's like, how do we how do we encourage people to understand that everybody's got their crap at every church and every organization? And so it's not that it's going to disappear on the other side. It's more like, how do we deal with the way that we respond to things differently than what my personality is in tune to normally do because I'm an introvert. And so being on staff with that, you know, we have a lot of, and I would say, I don't know, on the other side of that, like from the senior leadership down, or even a worship pastor who may be overseeing a production person, I think that we are portrayed in that light because that's all they've ever known. And so what does it look like to show your worship pastor that you can actually be better at building that bridge between the booth and the stage, you know, which Jeff Sandstrom talks about all the time. And just the idea of being a nice guy and knowing people's kids' names before you tell them to turn down their amp, you know, it's such a big deal, you know?
Yeah. You have to, as you know, there's a big long chasm. There's a big wide chasm between the stage and the front of house. And our job as the technical director, production manager, whatever, is to narrow that, you know, and to, the number one thing is like, you know, we have to be on the same team as the worship people. We're on the same team. It's not us and them. Yeah. Every church that I used to go into that would hire me to consult, they're saying, oh, our team is in a mess and it's all this stuff. Can you come in and just kind of audit us and tell us what's going on and everything like that? Every single time, all it was a couple of little things. And the number one thing it was that the worship team and the tech team didn't even know each other. They didn't know, their names, their kids. Like you said, they didn't, the lead tech person and the worship pastor were not on the same page at all.
Yeah.
I learned this from Ken Robertson when he was one of the best TDs in the world. And he was my boss for 10 years. He had lunch with the worship pastor at two churches that we were at. He had the lunch, well, at least at the first church. I can't remember the second church if he did or not, but the first church, I know he had lunch with Stan all the time when we were Mariners. So, yeah. So I don't know if that was every week. I don't think it was every week, but because Stan will not give you advice, but Stan will go to lunch with you. So you just have to remember that.
Well, and I want to say something on that real quick. Yeah. I went to lunch with Stan like a month ago. He was up in Chicago visiting his daughter, and he's like, "Hey, you want to grab brunch?" So we grab brunch. And I love Stan so much because he drew on napkins for me for like 2.5 hours at a lunch. And I left and I was like, "Stan, I got to take all these napkins. Don't let the servers grab them. Like, I got to take them all." And they're sitting in my car right now still because he just wrote down. I'm like, I don't know how you come up with this stuff, but it's so much wisdom. And I took all the napkins. I took pictures of them. And I was like, this is so good. So anyways, that was.
Well, I used to tell him, "Will you meet with me?" He goes, "Well, I won't meet with you, but I will go have lunch with you."
Yeah,
and that was, you know, that's even better, right?
Yeah. To
go hang out. And so, but anyway, you know, Ken always would have lunch like once a week with somebody in worship. And it used, well, it was a worship pastor for the most part. And that just taught me, being his assistant for 10 years, it taught me that, well, that's a good. So then from then on, when I became a TD on my own, I would make sure that I had some kind of connection with my leadership, like every week, so that they knew we were on the same page. And you got to make, and I will tell you, and I don't know, I would love to have you speak to this. You can't expect them, even if they're your boss, you can't expect them to reach out, to reach across the table, to reach, you know, to walk across the room and do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, man, I mentioned in part of that thing with me and God kind of wrecking me in my staff meeting yesterday, part of that conversation was that where I've had quite a few bosses in my time here, and in my heart to heart with this person, it was like, "Hey, we don't know each other enough and we're not seeing eye to eye in some things because you don't know me and I don't know you. And let's fix that." And whether that's over breakfast once a week or whatever you want to do, we need to do that, because I think, and not talk about work. I don't care about work. I want to know about you and your kids, and I want him to know about me and my kids and the things that I've experienced growing up, and the way that I view the church sometimes, and some baggage that we all carry into our current roles in ministry or whatever. And so as I learn more about that, as I've done with my team members, I'm like, that's why he's responding that way to me, because he's felt this in a different way or a different hurt before. And so, you know, it's you got to get to know these people, whatever it takes. And it's just, you know, it doesn't have to be some fancy lunch every week. It's go bring him Dunkin' Donuts coffee or whatever it is, you know?
So, well, it's what Lee Field says all the time. It's just really hard to, get mad at the bass player when you know his kids' names, you know, and it's so true, you know, and like, well, I remember the very last church I was at, the worship pastor and I were really close, really good friends. In fact, one of the reasons I took the job is because I had met with him earlier. I worked part for him and part for the senior pastor, but he is not the one that hired me. The senior pastor hired me, but I met with him. I'll never forget. I met with him at Marie Callender's. A lot of people don't even know what Marie Callender's is, but it's a restaurant.
That's so funny.
You know, there's a lot of them. Well, there used to be a lot of them here in California, but
but
they're not anymore. I think they're going out of business or whatever, but they got great pie.
They do.
We had like a 4-hour meeting at Marie Callender's, and I remember just going, "Okay, I can work with this guy for the rest of my life. He's a rock star. He's phenomenal. He's totally awesome. And I could work with him for the rest of my life." But we had to cultivate that relationship. You know, we had to go, "Okay, well, we're going to do this. We're going to know each other's families." We went out. I mean, he loves sushi, and I would go to the sushi restaurant with him, even though I don't like sushi at all. But I would figure out on the menu what I could eat that was not like sushi, you know?
Sure.
And so, you know, but that's what, you know, and then he'd go to my favorite Mexican restaurant. You know, he was from the Midwest, so he didn't understand what real Mexican food was like here in California. Because every place else that's not California has completely different Mexican food.
I believe that.
You know, and so Southern California, you know, a large majority of our population, especially here in Southern California, is Hispanic. So, and a lot of them, a great majority of them are from Mexico, or roots are from Mexico. So, even though our food here in California is not real Mexican food, it's the California version of real Mexican food. But then you go to like Indiana or whatever. And I'm like, I always have people go, oh yeah, we've got a great Mexican restaurant here. I'll go, okay. And we'll go. And I'm like, yeah, this isn't good Mexican food.
Yep. It's so funny. I know what that is. Cause that's what I grew up on.
Southern California people are Mexican food snobs. That's like the one, if we're not really food snobs, but Mexican food, we are totally snobs, and we don't love Tex-Mex. Like,
sure.
I mean, I used to go see Ryan Howell all the time. And when he was at Watermark, and there's Torchy's. You ever been to Torchy's?
Yes.
Torchy's Tacos. Okay. That's like the one place I will eat. That's the one place I will eat Tex-Mex. Now, there is one of the greatest Mexican restaurants in the world in Dallas, and that's Papacito's.
Papacito's, dude. Oh my gosh.
But here's the crazy thing. They make Tex-Mex, but they also, a lot of their food is like Southern California Mexican food.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, it's crazy because like their chimichangas and their tacos and stuff like that are very much like,
salsa. I don't know, but it sounds so good. Let's get out of here.
How did we get a Mexican food all of a sudden?
Let's get out of here and head over to Dallas or San Antonio and get some Tex-Mex.
Yeah. Anytime we're talking about like Mexican food is pretty much my favorite food. So I'll eat it anywhere. And then barbecue. Here's the thing. Here's the flip side. There's like three places in Southern California, all of Southern California, where you can actually get good barbecue.
Yeah.
Most people in California think that Dickie's and Lucille's is good barbecue. Okay. That is not true. Lucille's is okay, but Dickie's, I think it's terrible. And everybody's so like, funny. Oh, this is the greatest. And I'm like, it is not the greatest. I'm probably offending a lot of people, especially if you're Texan.
Hey, but
I just don't like it. I'm like, I'm not a fan of it. Now you go to Kansas City, you go to St. Louis.
Barbecue's unreal. Yep.
Let me tell you something. That is barbecue right there.
Yep. Yeah. And we lived in St. Louis for 6 years. And when we moved back up to Chicago, we were craving barbecue. Like, you can't get it. You cannot get it.
It's really funny because, Duke lives in Kansas City now, just outside of Kansas City. But he was up in Washington for a long time, for like 10 years or whatever. And when I'd go up and visit, you know, he was the only, his was the best barbecue in all of the Northwest, you know, cause he knows how to cook barbecue, you know?
Yeah.
And so the only good barbecue in the Northwest was at Duke's house.
That's so funny.
Yeah. But you'd go anywhere and they have Mexican, and there's a Mexican restaurant in Olympia that's like, it's okay. Like, it's all right. Okay. But then Brian O'Mara and I found, this turned into the food hour. How did this turn into the
food hour? Yep.
We found in Tacoma, I can't remember the name of the restaurant now. It was like My Three Sons or something like that.
Okay.
We found this amazing barbecue place in Tacoma.
Oh, okay.
We were doing Christian Musician Summit. We were at Christian Musician Summit 2 years ago, and we found this amazing barbecue. And it's I think it's called like My Three Sons or something like that.
Okay.
And it's literally just a hole in the wall. And when we talked to the guy, he goes, oh, well, I'm from Louisiana or something. He was like from a place where they have great barbecue.
Yep.
And he goes, when I came up here, he goes, I was an electrician, but there was no good barbecue up here. So my wife and I started a barbecue place.
That's awesome. You know what? I was funny. I was texting Lee Fields the other day about something. And we were talking about some things we were just discussing on the podcast here about just churches and ministry being hard. And I just said, maybe I'll just do barbecue full time because that seems way more easy and way more fun. And
for sure. Yeah.
Cause we love our Traegers.
Well, my wife is a cook. That's what she does for a living. And many times I've thought we should just start a restaurant. You know, restaurants are really, the restaurant business is really hard.
Low margins.
It's really, really hard. And you work like, we knew some people that owned a restaurant, and it's brutal. And you got to love it. Just like tech ministry. I'm going to bring it back around.
So there we go. We're back now.
You got to love tech ministry to be in it. And it's got to be a calling, kind of like owning a restaurant.
Yes.
So in this whole partnership that you guys have on staffing, how are you? I mean, cause you're obviously partnering with Slingshot Group.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are you, so kind of let everybody know kind of what's your process? How are you, you know, helping people kind of figure this out.
Yeah. So, you know, the whole idea, and I said a little bit earlier, is like, we have these thousands of people that are involved in our Philo community or in our Philo tribe, or like, you know, what we would like to call them. And how can we find the people that are, that may be looking, or we may be that first tug on their heart to kind of look for the next thing and partner up with churches that are looking for those exact type of roles. So we work with churches all across the US to kind of help place production people all over. And Slingshot and Stan started this, really doing a lot of the stuff in worship. And you had mentioned it earlier, and you were the beginning process of them even looking at what does it look like to hire tech people in churches. And so
I didn't know what I was doing when it was happening, but it was a good thought.
I still don't know what I'm doing, so it's great. But you know,
I'm glad it's come so far then.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's different. 'Cause honestly, you know, you mentioned the process, like, I have more conversations with churches and senior pastors and executive pastors, actually coaching them on what I want you to know about who we are. And even at the end of the day, they don't want to use us to kind of help them hire somebody. That's great. But if I can put it on an executive pastor's heart to help him understand that we're more pastors and leaders than just tech people, all of a sudden they look at this role differently. And sometimes I say, how many people are your associate campus pastors leading on a weekend, or how many, you know, whatever it is. And I'm not trying to compare apples to oranges, but more saying, like, you have 40, 50 volunteers in production alone. Like, you should have somebody who's really leading them well. Right. And so a lot of our process is coaching churches to do that. And,
that's insane to me, by the way, when you say that out loud.
Yeah.
That there are churches that have 40 or 50 tech volunteers and they don't have anybody leading them, really.
Yeah. Yeah. That's... And it's a free for all, or the worship, you know, it was funny. I had a conversation with the church, and sometimes when they, you know, send us an inquiry and I kind of describe the scenario that I'm about to hear, I think, and it's like, oh, you know, I'm assuming the way you're describing it is like your one sound guy is also your only electric guitar player. So like, when he needs to play on the weekend on stage, like, you're screwed in the booth. And they're like, oh my gosh, that's literally what happened to us last week. And I'm like, well, I just made it up, but I'm assuming that, because, you know, a lot of churches have the same problems. And so what does it look like for us to help find those people? And so we do that through the staffing thing. And, you know, our process is I tell churches this the most, like, we vet a lot on technology and we want them to be proficient in tech and a great audio person. But like, to be honest, I care way more about their culture and their personality fit and that they're teachable over everything else. And right. So if I can find somebody, and you and I, before we started recording, we're talking about this, about, you know, somebody who, if they're teachable and they're pretty good at what they're going to do, but we can develop that person to be this amazing rock star production manager in 5 years.
Right.
Those are the people that we're looking for. If the church is willing to develop them and lead them in a pastoral way in that process. And so our goal is to find churches to do that with, and then find candidates to get them plugged into those churches. And I've been having a blast doing it.
Well, and I love this, because I was kind of in the second wave of tech director. When I was kind of the tech director when it was really becoming a big thing to be a tech director. My boss, he was one of the, there was very few tech directors in the whole United States when he was tech directing. But then by the time I became a tech director, that was when it was really picking up momentum, and a lot of things were starting, we were starting like Tech Directors Roundtable and CDTRT and all this stuff, you know, and, you know, all that stuff, and Gurus was happening and you know, all that stuff. But, then we kind of went through this period where pastors just wanted button pushers, and they didn't want people who were in ministry. They didn't want people who were, super, super knowledgeable about a multitude of things. Just come in on the weekends, make sure the service happens. And that's all they wanted from those people.
Yeah.
That worked at first, but as all of my generation kind of rotated out, then there was like a whole bevy of technical people that really were not that involved in anything else in the church, just coming in on the weekends. And that seemed okay, But now we're actually coming back to where pastors are going, yeah, that was probably not a great long-term mm-hmm. strategy. And we actually need people that can do many things, that can do ministry, that can understand people, that can understand the vision of the church, that are there here for the long haul, and that love people and can develop them and all that stuff. So that it's kind of starting to come back around. Yeah. I actually really think that the whole pandemic may supercharge that.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know about you, but we joke all the time, which is instantaneously the three most important people in the church became the senior pastor, the worship pastor, and the technical director.
Yep.
Just like overnight, right?
Overnight, where, yeah.
And so, I mean, the first two were probably always important, but the tech sure, guy yeah. was, you know, the tech no. person wasn't all that no. important. And so all of a sudden it was like, the tech people are like, you know, hey, I got to, people that was on staff. She wasn't on staff when I was at Mariners, but she came on staff right afterwards. She had left like full-time ministry and she was working kind of interim at this other yeah. church. And when all this happened, because she had a technical background, because she had worked in the tech department of Mariners, literally she called me up and she was just like, I need to talk to you because I'm now the default technical director for yeah. the church, because yeah. literally I'm the only one that knows how to do any of this stuff. And I said, well, there you go. So God prepared you at Mariners for this yeah. and now you're doing this. And, you know, so all of a sudden she was like the most important person on the pastor's staff because yeah. she could make all this other stuff work, you know?
Yep.
So I think that this is a good thing. I think, you know, all things work together for good, right? For mm-hmm. those who love the Lord and are called to his purpose. And I think in this time, this is a time for tech directors to shine in the ministry part of it, mm-hmm. not just in, you know, pushing the button, turning the knob.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's so important that we're doing that. You know, I think back to when so many churches, and ours included, were pre-recording everything. And there was a lot more intimate conversations that were happening with me and senior leadership than I had probably had in a long time, just because of our proximity to each other throughout the week. We were just with each other way more. And so right. What does it look like for my senior pastor to actually trust me that we're going to make it crappin', you know, we're going to do this. And then, you know, the other side of that, coming out of the pandemic and then even pre, you know, it was showing your senior pastor that you can help get that vision for what they're casting. And it may be 7 campuses, and right. I can help you do that. If I don't know what to do, I know people on my phone that can help you, and there's resources out there to help us get to this place. And
right.
that's why you do what you do. And that's why we do at Philo, what we do.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's to resource our people better, so our churches can become more effective, because ultimately it's not necessarily my decision to cast vision for culture of where the church is going.
Right.
For some people it is in their roles, but you know, for me specifically, it's not. And so if I can catch on to the vision for what senior leadership is going for, let me help you get there. If you can give me the keys and you tell me where we're going, I will get you there, you know,
right.
in production. And so we want to make people effective enough to do that. So,
well, yeah, I mean, I feel like I think the reason I was able to transition into working for an integrator was because, you know, not all integrators are like this, but certainly the ones that I think serve the church well, and there are many out there that serve the church yeah. well, is that, you know, one of our mission statements were to equip the church for the ministry that the church is doing. Whatever that church is doing, mm-hmm. our job is to help you do it well with excellence through technology. And so that was why I was able to transition from full-time ministry to still being able to do ministry, helping churches do technology better. And that was a big thing for me, because I'm like, you know, I don't want to, I mean, no offense to anybody. I mean, if I had to feed my family, I would do it.
Sure.
But I don't care about putting paging systems in school rooms or, you know, yeah. or whatever, telephone systems for, mm-hmm. for, you know, you know, businesses or whatever. Now somebody has to do that, and that's, and they should do it. And if they have a passion for that, then rock on. And ministry can actually absolutely happen in secular jobs, and they should, and it should. Ministry should happen in your life, no matter where you are. But I'm not built for that. I'm built to help the church directly. And so, you know, that to be able to still do that and have just an extension of that, I think is certainly gratifying, you know?
Yeah. I think it's important, you know, for people that are probably listening who are in ministry full time, that you're taking care of yourself in this season so that you can last a little bit longer than what you think you might be able to if you looked at your situation today. Because over the years, I've looked at myself and I'm just going, I don't know how I can do this much longer. It's just exhausting. And taking care of yourself and taking care of your family, whether, you know, whatever that looks like, go on vacation, you know, take the PTO days that you're given every year and use them all. And go to counseling, figure, you know, get whatever it takes, you know, and through some personal stuff in my life, been doing that and really feeling like, you know, the Lord has put new wind in my sails in some ways, in ways that I didn't think was possible, which is pretty awesome. And hopefully, you know, that can be the case for others that are doing this full-time ministry and church production all the time.
Well, because like you, you talk to hundreds of churches. I talked to hundreds. Mm-hmm. I probably talked to, I don't know how many, I don't even know what day it is most of the time. Time has kind of become irrelevant this year. Noticed? Yep. Have you noticed that?
Totally.
But I talked to so many technical people that, you know, when I ask them, so, you know, how many hours you're putting in every week, you know, and I can't tell you how many of them have been like, well, I put in like 80 hours every week. And I've been doing that since April or March.
Yeah.
And I've told them all, I said, you got to stop doing that. Blah, blah, blah. I said, you got to go to your leadership and say, this is how long it takes, you know, count up your hours and do all this, and say, I don't think you understand that this, I've been doing this since this thing started.
Yeah.
And if you want me to remain healthy, we got to figure this out, because we can't do this, you know? And I told people, I said, look, you wanted staff. This is a really good excuse to get staff, because if you don't get somebody to help you, you're going to burn out, and then they're not going to have anybody.
Totally.
You're just going to fall off the cliff, and then there's not going to be anybody to help them. And leadership doesn't want that. I think because tech directors, you know, tech people, we tend to be passive aggressive people. If we let ourselves go there. Right. And so we'll think it becomes the me show, you know, it becomes the, well, they don't, you know, it, you know, when you're there at 2:30 programming, 2:30 in the morning programming lights getting, and you're sitting there in silence, getting pissed off at your pastor, you know, and he doesn't know, he doesn't know you're there. He doesn't know.
I know.
You know why? Because he relies on you to just do it. But he doesn't know what it takes unless you tell him. Now, not in a complaining way, but you know, you need to say, this is kind of my schedule, and this is, you know,
And it's interesting. Like, I've found myself over the years, as probably I've gone through counseling and just worked through some of these things, like having fake conversations in your head with your senior pastor about the things that you would say if, and they're all just fake. And I'm like, what am I doing? You know, I'm working myself up over literally nothing that has not even happened.
Well, and then it gets really bad when you think you've actually had the conversation with your pastor and you haven't.
Oh yeah.
And then you get yourself in, you know, you really, really get yourself in trouble sometimes because you go, I didn't actually talk to him about it. I didn't actually talk to him about that. That's not good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. And so it's a different season, but just like, you know, for the people that are listening, like hang in there and take care of yourself. And when you feel like that nudge is on your heart, I'd love to talk to you, you know, and if your church is ready to hire that next person, I'd love to talk to you as well. You know,
speaking of that, what's the best way for folks who are listening to this, that are not necessarily desperately seeking to get a job right tomorrow, but are like, you know, would like to have that out there, or at least talk to you about, you know, how that works. What's the best way to get a hold of you to start the conversation?
Yeah, that'd be philo.org/staffing. And you can kind of go in there and say, hey, I'm looking, or I'm a church that's looking to hire. And so fill out just a couple pieces of information with your phone and email. And I'd love to get connected and just kind of hear what's on your heart. And if anything, just build a relationship with you and We could talk about Mexican food and barbecue if you want, but just
which is always, you know, that
always a great conversation.
Well, and that makes a big difference when you're going to go work for an organization as to how close the barbecue and Mexican food restaurants are from the my very last church. The pastor took me to my favorite Mexican restaurant in our town without asking me which one was my favorite.
Perfect.
Like he went to the right
one. I'm in. I'll start.
And I went, okay. And then I said to him, do you guys do Saturday night services? He goes, no, and we never will, as long as I'm the senior pastor. And so in my head, I'm going, well, click two things off the box. And then his favorite drink was Dr. Pepper. I mean, I'm like three things. I love this guy. I don't even
know, so funny.
Like I know nothing else about him. I've heard him preach like two times. He's a great preacher, but he likes Dr. Pepper. He likes my favorite Mexican restaurant, and he will never have services on Saturday night. I'm like,
oh my gosh. I'll tell you what though, man, so we're back in live services now and we don't have Saturdays, and all the staff is like, please,
this
do
is
not
the most,
bring him back. Do not bring Saturdays back. Cause we've never had Saturdays off.
Yeah.
And it is glorious. And I would show up at 4 a.m. if I had to on Sunday mornings and work 6 p.m. service on Sunday.
Oh,
if I don't have if I don't have a Saturday night service. So
yeah, I did Saturday night services for 15 years. I did Saturday night services.
Incredible.
And when I was able to not do them anymore, cause we had a big culture change in the church I was at and they stopped doing Saturday night services. It was glorious. It was like, I'd be home on Saturday nights and my wife would be like, this is weird. What are you doing home? This is like, she goes, me and the girls always have plans. I'm like, that's okay. You guys go do your plans. I'm just going to sit here and relax.
So yeah. It's different.
Totally.
Making pancakes with my kids on Saturday mornings, you know, versus, you know, heading out to church at 10:30 or 11 for, 1 or 2 o'clock rehearsal and just getting ready for things.
And just so you know, if there's any pastors listening, that is actually what happens. I actually had a pastor call me at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. And he goes, hey, so when you get to the church, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, when you get to the church, I'm like, my whole team's been here since 10.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Yep. Well, what's the special occasion? I go, it's Saturday.
Church
that happens every week.
It's crazy. It's a different world. And
here's the thing, I say that not to be passive aggressive with this pastor, because actually he became a really close friend of mine, but it was like he didn't know it was a revelation to him that our team, our volunteers and staff, was all there at 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday to pull off a 4:30 service. He had no idea. He's like, wow, every week? I'm like, every week.
It's crazy.
You know,
it's crazy.
They won't know if you don't tell. My point is they won't know if you don't tell them.
Yeah.
Not in a complaining, passive aggressive way, but just say, hey, I want you to know this is our schedule. This is how we pull all the stuff off.
Yeah. You got to tell them.
And most pastors, I don't know how you know, your experience with this, but I've really never met a pastor who was like, yes, I'm trying to burn my tech director out and wreck their lives.
Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to do that. And it's, I think it's up to us as the introverted production people to get out of our own box and say, hey, I need help. And this is too much for me. What should I do?
Right.
And they would, and if any good leader is in your organization, they're going to say, oh my gosh, let's fix it right now. We got to figure this out, you know?
Yep.
So it's different, man. So hang in there, buddy.
Yeah.
We're all doing it with you.
Yeah. It's a crazy season. It's a crazy season. And we've been talking a lot about that, obviously, because we're in the middle of it. And, and I think if anybody dares to listen to these things in 2 years, they'll be like, wow, that was, what a weird time that was. Weird time that was. So anyway, I mean, I try not to, you know, we try not to harp on it too much, but it has upended everybody's lives in a major way.
Yes. Yeah.
Whether you know, and it doesn't even matter what you think of how it's been handled, or whether it's as bad as it is or it's not as bad as it does. None of those things matter. The fact of the matter is, it's upended everybody's life, and everybody's got to figure out how to adjust and make this work. You know.
Yeah.
I joked on this podcast many times. One of the phrases I want to be stricken from the English language is new normal. I absolutely hate new normal.
Yeah. New normal and pivot.
Pivot. And then, well, pivot I like, because, you know, pivot, you know, as long as Ross says it, that makes me laugh. One of the greatest episodes, one of the greatest episodes in TV history ever is that episode of Friends.
Yep.
Hands down. Yep. But the other thing is that, you know, we do have a different, we're never going to be, nothing's ever going to be go back to the way it was.
Yeah.
Things are going to be different. And to me, I don't know about you, but this seems like a great time. And I try to encourage churches to, this is a great time to look at everything you do, mm-hmm. especially in production and the live events and, you know, services and all this kind of stuff and everything you do online, and just look at it and go, okay, let's look at this through new eyes. One of the things that's been great is showing pastors the analytics during their sermons.
Yes. Yeah.
And I say that because it's funny, because I've had some pastors, but one of my buddies is a pastor. He says, man, analytics are brutal when you're preaching. He goes, I know exactly where I was at those moments. And I'm like, well, people, mm-hmm. not, you know, so, you know, land the plane in 30 minutes. He said the biggest thing he learned is he has to land the plane in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, or people are just off.
Yep, they're out.
They're gone.
They're out. Yeah.
People are way more forgiving live.
They are. Absolutely. I mean, yeah. And there's, yeah, that data isn't lying, and we've never had that kind of data before.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's changing the way that we look at church communications in every single area of what we do in the weekend.
And that's a good thing. And it's really funny because we used to say, well, we have all this information, you know, what are you going to do with it? And now we know. Yeah. Like this moment is like, man, the analytics are great. I mean, even for making any kind of video content, if you make video content, you need to look at the analytics.
Yeah.
And you need to watch, you know, YouTube's actually great because you can actually watch the video and see where the analytics are in that particular part. And man, and that is, it is,
and it's brutal.
It's brutal. It's humbling. And it's actually fantastic information at the same time. And if you don't do it, you're just wasting that resource, because it's really good, you know?
Yeah.
Well, hey, Caleb, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I've totally enjoyed it.
Me too.
And like you said, everybody out there, be encouraged. And if you are thinking about any of this stuff, get a hold of Caleb, on the Philo website, and, check it out. Just don't wait till you're on the bleeding edge.
Yeah.
To talk to somebody about different options and where the Lord may lead you on this stuff. Cause it's super important. So thanks everybody for listening. Like I always say on the podcast, is go to all the socials, like, and subscribe. We have a Facebook page. We have Instagram. We have Twitter. And also go to iTunes if you would, and give us a hopefully good rating, hopefully not a bad rating. Only give good ratings. That's what I'm saying. If you want to give a bad rating, don't go to iTunes, and give us a good review. That really does help get us up there in those, the infamous algorithms of iTunes and podcasts.
Yeah.
So anyway, all right, we'll have another great interview here coming up. So thanks everybody for listening, and have a great week, and we'll talk to you later.